Letter number 43, a consolatory letter to the parents of Geoffrey. There is no reason to mourn a son as lost, who is religious, still less to fear for his delicacy of constitution. If God makes your son his son also, what do you lose, or what does he himself lose? Being rich, he becomes richer. Being already high-born, of still nobler lineage, being illustrious, he gains greater renown. And, what is more than all, once a sinner, he is now a saint. He must be prepared for the kingdom that has been prepared for him from the beginning of the world. And for this end, the short time that he has to live, he must spend with us, until he has scraped off the filth of the worldly life and wiped away the earthly dust, and at last is fit for the heavenly mansion. If you love your son, of course you will rejoice, because he goes to his father and to such a father as he. Yea, he goes to God. But you lose him not, nay, rather through him you gain many sons. For all of us who are in or of Clairvaux acknowledge him as a brother, and you as parents. But perchance you fear the effect of a severe life upon his body, which you know to be frail and delicate. But of such fear it is said, there were they brought in great fear where no fear was. Reassure yourselves and be comforted. I will be to him a father, and he shall be to me a son, until the Father of mercies and the God of all consolation receive him from my hands. So do not mourn, do not weep, for your Geoffrey is hastening to joy and not to grief. I will be to him father, mother, brother, and sister. I will make the crooked straight for him and the rough way smooth. I will so order and arrange everything for him that his soul shall profit and his body not suffer loss. Moreover, he shall serve the Lord in joy and gladness, and shall sing in the ways of the Lord, that great is the glory of the Lord. Letter number 44, concerning the Maccabees, but to whom written is unknown. He relies to the question why the church has decreed a festival to the Maccabees alone of all the righteous under the ancient law. Fulk, abbot of Epernay, had already written to ask me the same question as your charity has addressed to your humble servant by Brother Hassillon. I have put off replying to him, being desirous to find, if possible, some statement in the Fathers about this which was asked, which I might send to him, rather than to reply by some new opinion of my own. But as I do not come upon one, in the meantime, I reply to each of you with my thoughts upon the matter, on condition that if you discover anything better and more probable in your reading, conversation, or by your meditations, you will not omit to share it with me in turn. You ask, then, why it seemed good to the Fathers to decree that an annual commemoration with veneration equal to our martyrs, should be solemnly made in the church by a certain peculiar privilege to the Maccabees alone out of all the ancient saints. If I should say that having made proof of the same courage as those, they were worthy now of the same honors, that would perhaps answer the question why they were included, but not why they alone were, while it is quite evident that there were others among the ancients who suffered with equal zeal for righteousness, but yet have not attained to be reverenced with equal solemnities. If I reply that the latter have not received the same honors as our martyrs, because, although their valor deserved it, the time when they lived deprived them of it, why was not the same consideration applied also to the Maccabees, if indeed they too, on account of the era when they lived, did not at once enter into the light of heaven, but descended into the darkness of Hades? For the first begotten from the dead, he who opened to believers the kingdom of heaven, the Lamb of the tribe of Judah, who opens and no more shuts, at whose entrance with complete authority it was sung by the heavenly powers, "Lift up your heads, O ye gates, avid and be lift up, ye everlasting doors, and the King of glory shall come in." He had not yet appeared. If on that account it appears unsuitable to commemorate with joy the passing away of those which was not a passage of glory and of joy, why was there an exception made for the Maccabees? Or if they obtained favor on account of the courage which they displayed, why was not the same favor extended to those others? Or, ought it be said, in order to explain this difference, that if the martyrs of the ancient law, as well as those of the new law, have suffered for the same cause of religion, yet they did not suffer in the same condition with those who have attained to the glory of martyrdom. It is agreed that all the martyrs, whether of the Old or the New Testament, equally suffered for the sake of religion. But there is a distinction, because the one class suffered because they held it, the other because they censured those who had held it not, the one because they would not desert it, the other because they declared that those who perish who deserted it, and to the sum up in a word, that in which the two differ, perseverance in the faith has done in our martyrs that which zeal for the faith has done in those of the ancient law. The Maccabees are alone among the ancient martyrs, because they possess not only the same cause as the new martyrdom, but also, as I have said, the form of it. And rightly, therefore, they have attained the same glory and fame as the new martyrs of the church. For like our martyrs, they were urged to pour libations to false gods, to renounce the law of their fathers, and even to transgress the commandments of God. And like them, they resisted and died. Not so did Isaiah or Zechariah, or even that great prophet, John the Baptist, die of whom the first is said to have been sawn asunder, the second slain between the temple and the altar, and the third beheaded in prison. If you ask by whom, it was by the wicked and the irreligious. For what cause? For justice and religion. In what manner? For confessing and openly upholding these. They openly upheld the truth before those who hated it, and thus drew upon themselves the hatred which caused their death. That which the unrighteous and the wicked persecuted was not so much religion in itself as those who brought it before them, nor was their object to attack the righteousness of others, but to remain undisturbed in their own unrighteousness. It is one thing to seize upon the good things of another, and another to defend one's own goods, to persecute the truth, and not to be willing to follow it oneself, to grudge at believers, to be angry at their reproofs, to stop the mouth of those who confess their faith, and not to be able to bear patiently the taunts of those who contradict. Thus Herod sent and seized John. Wherefore? Because he preached Christ, or because he was a good and he was a just man? On the contrary, he reverenced him the more on this account, and having heard him, did many things. But it was because John reproached Herod, because of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife. On that account, he was bound and beheaded. No doubt he suffered for the truth, but because he urged its interests with zeal, not because he was urged to deny it. This was why the suffering of so great a martyr is observed with less solemnity than those even of far less famous men. It is certain that if the Maccabees had suffered in such a matter, and for such a reason as St. John, there would not have been any mention of them at all. But a like confession of the truth, not unlike that of the Christian martyrs, made them like those, and rightly, therefore, a similar veneration follows. Let it not be objected that they did not, like our martyrs, suffer for Christ expressly by name, because it does not affect his status as a martyr whether a person suffers under the law on behalf of the observances of the law or under grace for the commandments of the gospel. For it is recognized that each of these equally suffers for the truth, and therefore for Christ, who said, "I am the truth." Therefore, the Maccabees are more deserving of the honors that have been conferred upon them for the kind of their martyrdom than for the valor displayed in it, since we do not see that the Church has decreed such honor to the righteous of a former time, although they have displayed equal courage on behalf of righteousness for the time in which they lived. I suppose that it was thought unfit to appoint a day a festival for the death, however laudable, before the death of Christ, especially since before that saving passion, those who died, instead of entering into joy and glory, endured the darkness of the prison house. The Church, then, as I said above, considered that an exception should be made in favor of the Maccabees, since the nature of their martyrdom conferred upon them what the time of their suffering denied to others. Nor them only, but those also who preceded in their death, the death of him who was the life manifest in the flesh, either dying during his life as Simeon and John the Baptist, or for him as the innocents, we venerate with solemn rites, although they too descended into Hades, but for another reason. Thus, in the case of the innocents, it would be unjust to deprive innocents dying on behalf of righteousness, of fame, even in the present. John also, knowing that from his day the kingdom of heaven suffered violence, therefore proclaimed, "Do penance, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." And seeing that the life would immediately follow him, endure death and joy. He, before his death, was careful to inquire from the Lord himself respecting this, and had the happiness to be informed of it. For when he sent his disciples to ask of Jesus, "Art thou he that should come, or are we to look for another?" he received for answer, after the enumeration of very many miracles, "And blessed is he who shall not be offended in me." In which answer the Lord intimated that he was about to die, and by such a death as might be to the Jews a stumbling block, and to the Greeks foolishness. At this word, the friend of the bridegroom went onward, rejoicing and with a willing mind, because he could not doubt that the bridegroom also would speedily come. Therefore, he who so joyfully could die merited also to be held in joyful remembrance. And that old man, as full of virtues as of days, who when death was already so near, said, holding in his arms him who was the life, "Now let you, servant, depart in peace, for mine eyes have seen your salvation," as if he had said, "I go down without fear into Hades, because I feel that my redemption is so nigh." He too, who died with such fearless joy and such joyful security, rightly deserves to be commemorated with joy in the church. But on what principle shall a death be accounted joyful, which is not accompanied by the joys of heaven? Or from whence should a dying person derive joy, who was sure that he was going down into the darkness of the prison house, and yet did not bear with him any certitude? How soon the consolation of a deliverer thence should come to him. Thus it was that when one of the saints heard, "Set your house in order, for you shall die and not live," he turned himself to the wall and wept bitterly, and so asked and obtained some deferring of hateful death. Thus also he lamented miserably, saying, "I shall go to the gates of the grave. I am deprived of the half of my days." And a little after added, I shall not see the Lord in the land of the living. I shall behold man no more with the inhabitants of the world. Hence also another says, Who shall grant me that thou would protect me in the grave, that thou would keep me secret until thy wrath be past, that thou would appoint me a set time and remember me? Israel also said to his sons, Ye will bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. What appearance is there in these deaths of solemn joy, of rejoicing and festival? But our martyrs desire to be unclothed and be with Christ, knowing well that where the body is, there without delay will the eagles be gathered together. There will the righteous rejoice in the sight of God, and be in joy and felicity. There, O most blessed Jesus, shall every saint who is delivered from this wicked world be filled speedily with the joy of thy countenance. There in the habitations of the just resounds forever one song of joy and salvation. Our soul is delivered as a bird out of the net of the fowler. The net is broken, and we are delivered. How could those sing this song of gladness who in Hades sat in darkness and the shadow of death? While as yet there was no Redeemer for them, no Savior. While the sun rising from on high, Christ, the first fruits of them that slept, had not yet visited us. Rightly then does the Church, who has learnt to rejoice with them that rejoice, and to weep with them that weep, distinguished because of the time at which they lived between those whom she judges equal in valor and does not think the descent into Hades proper to be followed with equal honor as is the passage into life. Therefore, though the motive makes martyrdom, yet the time and the nature of it determine the difference between martyrdoms. Thus the time in which they lived separates the Maccabees from the martyrs of the new law and joins them with those of the old. But the nature of their martyrdom associates them with the new and divides them from the old. From these causes come the differences of observance with which they are kept in memory in the Church. But that which is common to the whole company of the saints before God is what the holy prophet declares. Precious in the sight of the Lord is the death of his saints. And why he calls it precious, he explains to us. When he has given sleep to his beloved, behold, children, the heritage of the Lord. His reward, the fruit of the womb. Nor must we think that martyrs alone are beloved, since we remember that it was said of Lazarus, Our friend Lazarus sleeps, and elsewhere, Blessed are the dead who die in the Lord. Not those alone who die for the Lord, like the martyrs, but without doubt, those also who die in the Lord as confessors are blessed. There are two things, as it seems to me, which makes death precious: the life which precedes it, and the cause for which it is endured. but more the cause than the life. But when both the cause and the life concur, that is the most precious of all. Letter number 45, 1120 AD, to a youth named Fulk, who afterwards was archdeacon of Langres. He gravely warns Fulk, a canon regular, whom an uncle had, by persuasions and promises, drawn back to the world, to obey God and be faithful to him rather than to his uncle. To the honorable young man Fulk, Brother Bernard, a sinner, wishes such joy in youth as in old age he will not regret. I do not wonder at your surprise. I should wonder if you were not surprised that I should write to you, a countryman to a citizen, a monk to a scholastic, there being no apparent or pressing reason for so doing. But if you recall what is written, I am debtor both to the wise and to the unwise, and that charity seeks not her own. Perhaps you will understand that what it orders is not mere presumption, for it is charity which compels me to reprove you, to condole with you, though you do not grieve, to pity you, though you do not think yourself pitiable. Nor shall it be unserviceable to you to hear patiently while you are compassionate. In feeling your pain, you may get rid of its cause, and knowing your misery, being to cease to be miserable. O Charity, good mother who both nourishes the weak, employs the vigorous, and blames the restless, using various expedients with various people, as loving all her sons, she blames with gentleness and with simplicity praises. It is she who is the mother of men and angels, and makes the peace not only of earth but of heaven. It is she who, rendering God favorable to man, has reconciled man to God. She, my folk, makes those brethren with whom you once shared pleasant bread to dwell in one manner of life in a house. Such and so honorable a parent complains of being injured, of being wounded by you. But in what have I injured, you reply, or wounded her? In this, without doubt, that you, whom she had taken in her maternal bosom and nourished with her milk, have untimely withdrawn yourself, and having known the sweetness of the milk, which can train you up for salvation, have rejected and disdained it so quickly and carelessly. O most foolish boy! Boy more in understanding than in age, who has fascinated you to depart so quickly from a course so well begun? My uncle, you will say, so Adam once threw the blame of sin upon his wife, and his wife upon the serpent, to excuse themselves. Yet each received the well-deserved sentence of their own fault. I am unwilling to accuse the dean. I am unwilling that you should excuse yourself by this means. For you are inexcusable. His fault does not excuse yours. But what did he do? Did he use violence? Did he take you by force? Nay, he begged, not insisted. attracted you by flatteries, not dragged you by violence. Who forced you to yield to his flatteries? He had not yet given up what was his own. What wonder that he should reclaim you, who was his? If he demands a lamb from the flock, a calf from the herd, and no one disputes his right, who can wonder that having lost you, who are of more value in his sight than many lambs or calves, he should reclaim you? Probably he does not aim at that degree of perfection of which it is said, "If anyone has taken away thy goods, seek them not again." But you, who had already rejected the world, what had you to do with following a man of the world? The timid sheep flies when the wolf approaches, the gentle dove when she sees the hawk. The mouse, though hungry, dares not leave his hole when the cat is prowling around. And yet you, when thou saw a thief, you consented with him. For what else than a thief shall I call him who has not hesitated to steal that most precious pearl of Christ, your soul? I should wish, if it were possible, to pass over his fault, lest the truth should obtain for me only hatred and no result. But I am not able, I confess, to pass a man untouched, who up to this very day is found to have resisted the Holy Spirit with all his power. For he who does not hinder evil when he can, even although the evil purpose may be frustrated, is not clear of that purpose. Assuredly, he tried to damp my fervor when it was new, but thanks to God, he did not succeed. Another nephew of his, Garrick, your kinsman, he much opposed, but what harm did he do? On the contrary, he was of service, for the old man at length unwillingly desisted from persecution, and as the youth, his nephew, remained unsubdued, he was the more meritorious for his temptation. But alas, how was he able to overcome you, who was not able to overcome him? Was he stronger or more prudent than you? Assuredly, those who knew both before preferred Fulk to Garrick. But the event of the combat showed that men's judgment had erred. But what shall I say concerning the malice of an uncle who withdraws his own nephews from the Christian warfare to drag them with himself to perdition? Is it thus he is accustomed to benefit his friends, those whom Christ calls to abide with him forever? This uncle calls back to burn with him forevermore. I wonder if Christ is not reproving him when he says, "How often would I have gathered thy nephews as a hen gathers her chickens under her wings, and thou wouldest not. Behold, thy house is left unto thee desolate." Christ says, "Suffer the little children to come unto me, for of such is the kingdom of heaven." This uncle says, "Suffer my nephews to burn with me." And Christ says, "They are mine, they ought to serve me." But their uncle says, "They ought to perish with me." Christ says, "They are mine, I have redeemed them." "But I," says the uncle, "have brought them up." You indeed, says Christ, have fed them, but with my bread, not thine. While I have redeemed them not with thy blood, but my own. Thus the uncle, according to the flesh, struggles against the father of spirits for his nephews, whom he disinherits of heavenly possessions, while he desires to load them with earthly. Yet Christ, not considering it robbery to draw to himself those whom he has made and redeemed with his own blood, has done when they came to him what he hath before promised. Him who comes unto me I will in no wise cast out. He opened gladly to folk, the first who knocked, and made him glad also. What more? He put off the old man and put on the new, and showed forth in his character and life the canonical function which had existed in name alone. The report of it flies abroad to Christ, a sweet savor, and the novelty of the thing diffused on all sides brought it to the ears of his uncle. What then did the carnal guardian, who lost the carnal solace of the flesh, which he had brought up and loved after a carnal fashion? Although to others the event was a savor of life unto life, not so to him. Wherefore, because the carnal man receives not the things of the Spirit of God, for they are foolishness unto him. For if he had the Spirit of Christ, he would not so greatly lament on account of the flesh that which he rejoiced over on account of the Spirit. But because he relishes earthly things, not those which are above, he is sad and troubled, and reflects thus within himself, What do I hear? Woe is me! From what hope have I fallen? Ought he to do anything without my advice and permission? What right, what law, what justice, what reason is it that him whom I have nourished up from infancy, another person should have the good of when grown up? Now that my head is white, alas, I shall spend the remainder of my life in grief, because the staff of my old age has deserted me. Woe is me! If this night my soul is required of me, who shall those things be which I have prepared? My storehouses are full, disgorging this one into that. My sheep fruitful, abounding in their goings forth. My oxen fat, and for whom shall these remain? My lands, my meadows, my houses, my vases of gold and of silver, for whom have they been amassed? Certain of the richer and the more profitable honors of my church I had acquired for myself. The rest, although I could not have them, I hoped that folk would. What then shall I do? Because of him shall I lose so much, for whatever I possess without him I reckon as lost. Rather, then I will both retain them and recall him if I can. What is done cannot be undone. What is heard cannot be concealed. Folk is a canon regular, and if he returns to the world, will be remarked and disgraced. But if it is better to hear that about him than to live without him, let integrity yield to convenience, shame to necessity. I prefer not to spare the ingenuousness of a youth rather than to undergo miserable melancholy. Adopting then this counsel of the flesh, forgetful of reason and law, as it were a lion prepared for prey, and as a lioness robbed of her whelp, raging and roaring, not respecting holy things, he burst into the dwelling of the saints, in which Christ had hidden his younger soldier from the strife of tongues, who was one day to be adjoined to the company of angels. He demands that his nephew be restored to him. He loudly complains that by him he had been wrongly deserted. While Christ resists, saying, "Unhappy man, what are you doing? Why do you rob? Why do you persecute me? Is it not enough that you have taken away your own soul from me and the souls of many others by your example? But you must tear him also from my hand with impious daring. Do you not fear the coming judgment? Do you not despise my terrors? Upon whom do you wage war? Upon the terrible one who takes away the spirit of princes. Madman, return to thyself. Remember thy last end and sin not. Call to mind with salutary fear what you are. And thou, O youth," he says, "if thou dost assent and agree to his wishes, thou shalt die the death. Remember that Lot's wife was indeed delivered from Sodom because she believed God, but was transformed into the way because she looked back. Learn in the gospel that he who has once put his hand to the plow, to him it is not permitted to look back. Your uncle, who has already lost his own soul, seeks yours. The words of his mouth are iniquity and guile. Do not learn, my son, to do evil. Do not turn aside to vanities and falsehoods. Behold, in the way in which you walk, he hides snares. He has stretched nets. His discourses are smooth as butter, and yet they are sharp spears. See, my son, that you are not taken with lying lips and a deceitful tongue. Let divine fear transfix your flesh, that the desire of the flesh may not deceive you. It flatters, but under its tongue is suffering and sorrow. It weeps, but betrays. It betrays to catch the poor when it has attracted him. Beware, I say, my son, that you do not confer with flesh and blood, for my sword shall devour flesh. Despise entreaties and promises. He promises great things, but I greater. He offers more, but I most of all. Will you throw away heavenly things for earthly, eternal for temporal? Otherwise, it behooves you to dissolve the vows which your lips have pronounced.